Okay, please turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel. First Samuel chapter 13. Now you remember we're going through each book of the Old Testament fairly quickly. This is more of a survey of the Old Testament and the major theological themes that are there. So we're looking at key events, key people, key events, key things that have happened, and noting key truths that God has for us, that he has revealed to us in the written word about who he is and how we should live in light of who he is. And we, in 1 Samuel, this is our third study in 1 Samuel. We looked at Samuel. All of Samuel's life is recorded in 1 Samuel. We looked at Saul. All of Saul's life is recorded in 1 Samuel. And tonight we're looking at David. Part of David's life is recorded in 1 Samuel. With David, we can say that David, he's an impressed man marked by faith. But he's not like Saul. Remember, Saul was impressed with himself. Saul was impressed with himself. He relied upon himself. Saul had a tendency, whenever he heard God's commands, to twist them until they seemed good to him. Saul was marked by persistent disobedience. David, though, he's an impressed man marked by faith. He's impressed with God, not himself. David is impressed with God. Now, if you'll turn to 1 Samuel 13 there, we remember Saul's, in a sense, he was placed on a test. And God was showing his heart. And he refused to wait when the Philistines seemed to be getting close. Saul refused to wait for Samuel's arrival. And waiting, remember, in the Old Testament is another term for that. You could think of it as faith, resting in God. We must wait upon him. We must have faith and trust in him. Well, he got impatient. He refused to wait any longer, and he himself went ahead with the sacrifice. And Samuel confronted him on his disobedience. Look at verse 13, 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 13. Samuel said to Saul, "You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." And that's a key phrase there. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart. And we have that recorded also there in Acts, in the New Testament, Acts 13:22. And the Apostle Paul there is reciting the history and states the same thing. He's referring from this text to those in Antioch, where Paul went into the synagogue in Antioch and he stood up and began to teach in Acts 13:16. And he went reciting the history of Israel, and down in verse 22, "And when God had removed him, he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, 'I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will.'" And we see when David is anointed in chapter 16 of 1 Samuel, if you turn over to 1 Samuel 16, going to try and read key portions here of Samuel this evening to get a main thrust of David. 1 Samuel 16, I'll read verses 7 through 12. And I'll just reiterate again, we've looked at this text before about truthfulness and concealment, okay? We're never permitted to lie. Lying is always sin. And look at chapter 16, verse 2, and Samuel here is to go and anoint the new king. Well, chapter 16, verse 2, and Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears it, he will kill me." But the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I have come to sacrifice to the Lord.'" So God gives him cover, something true to say. So truthfully, he'll take a heifer with and he's going to give a sacrifice. So if anybody confronts him, he can say, "Yeah, I'm here to make a sacrifice." And Saul has no right to know the real reason. That's concealment. Concealment. When the other party has no right to know, we can keep things confidential. We have many things that have to be kept confidential in our world, in business, for instance. And that's what Samuel did. He did just that. Look at verse 5, and he said, "Peaceably, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord." And he did. He brought a heifer to come to sacrifice. That's a true statement. "Sanctify yourselves, come with me to the sacrifice." Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. Verse 6, "So it was when they came, then he looked at Eliab and said, 'Surely the Lord's anointed is before him.'" Verse 7, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.'" God has found someone after his own heart. So Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel, and he said, "Neither has the Lord chosen this one." Then Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, "Neither has the Lord chosen this one," each one of his sons. Thus Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen these." And Samuel said to Jesse, are all the young men here?" Then he said, "There remains yet the youngest, and there he is keeping the sheep." And Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for we will not sit down till he comes here." So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is the one." Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose and went to Ramah. David, a man after God's own heart. We remember 1 Kings 8:39, dedication of the temple, where God alone knows the hearts of all the sons of men. God alone knows the hearts of all the sons of men. And we will see in 1 Samuel, you read 1 Samuel, and one of the things that jumps out is David is overwhelmed with God's glory, God's honor, God's activities, God's work. With David and Goliath. David and Goliath here in chapter 17. Which you and I, if we have a heart that's after God, what is God concerned with in all things? His glory, his honor. So what would David be concerned with? God's glory, God's honor, right? A man after God's own heart. So look at chapter 17, 1 Samuel 17, 23 to 27. Here you've got Goliath of the Philistines. And I'll read just a portion here. Verse 23 to 27 of chapter 17. "Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them." This is after David brought some food to his brothers. So he's listening to all this. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches. We'll give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." You remember, just a side note, 1 Samuel 8, remember what God said? You want a king? You want an earthly king just like the other nations? They're going to tax you like crazy. Then David spoke to the man who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" That he should defy the armies of the living God. What is David concerned with? God's honor. And the people answered him in this manner, saying, "So shall it be done for the man who kills him." Look at down at verse 33, we get a picture of Saul's view of David. Chapter 17, verse 33, "And Saul said to David, 'You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he a man of war from his youth.'" Saul, remember, just looks at the outward appearance. Saul's impressed with himself. Remember, he's a head taller than everybody else. Extremely good looking. He's a big, tall man. He looks at little bitty David. "How dare you think you can take on Goliath?" Look over at chapter 18, verse 8. Look over there at chapter 18, verse 8. Saul's perspective of David again. "Then Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him." And this is where, look at verse 7. "The woman sang as they danced and said, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. And he said, 'They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed only thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom?'" He was jealous of people giving any type of praise to David. Remember, Saul is just about Saul. Saul is just about Saul. Remember, he made a monument to himself even, remember? He was supposed to wipe out the enemies there, and he refused to. In chapter 15 with Amalek, he was supposed to wipe out everything, but no, he kept the best things for himself, and he disobeyed God. And he had set up a monument early in the morning to himself. Saul is about Saul. Saul is about honoring Saul. And even when he acknowledged, remember in chapter 15, verse 30, Saul, when Samuel confronted Saul about his sin, Saul said, "Yeah, I've sinned, yet honor me now, please, before the elders of my people and before Israel," in chapter 15, verse 30. And remember what he said, "And return with me that I may worship the Lord your God." Right? Samuel's God, not his. It's interesting, you could truly say that Israel wanted an earthly king just like the other nations, the pagan nations. And God was clear in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 7 and 8, that they've rejected me, God said. They've rejected me. So what did God do? It's fascinating. The first king he gives them, the first earthly king, is a king just like the pagan nations. A pagan, really. An unbeliever, technically. One who was just about himself. Said, you want an earthly king just like the pagan? I'll give you one. And that was Saul. That was Saul. Okay, back to 17 there. David's confidence is in God. Chapter 17, 36 to 37. Chapter 17, 36 to 37. Back with David and Goliath here. "Your servant has killed both lion and bear," David says. "And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover," David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, Did David boast of his own strength? Did he say, oh, I was able to defeat that lion and bear. It was me that did it. I had the great skill in my slingshot, etc. No, David's reliance is in the Lord. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. I'm sure he said it with a sneer. Saying, oh, I'm going to watch this little guy get torn to pieces by this big Goliath. Goliath, look down at chapter 17 here, verses 43 to 50. Goliath mocks and ridicules David on the battlefield, and he's mocking God. 43 to 50. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods, the idols. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. This is where David is standing and fighting, but he knows God is the one who will give him the victory. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistine to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. David's trust was in God. His reliance was in God, in the strength of God. David does not rely on himself but on God. David fought. He stood and fought in God's strength, right? Be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Ephesians 6:10, what's the next verse say? Verse 11, put on the whole armor of God, right? And stand, right? You and I, we have to stand and fight. We have to put on the whole armor of God and stand and fight. But it's being strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Victory is only God willing. God's strength, God's doing. Well, we see that, as I mentioned earlier already in chapter 18, 7 and 8, Saul is very angry against David, right? He doesn't like that the people are starting to sing songs that David is better in their eyes than Saul, because Saul's all about himself and what people think. Saul tries to kill David on multiple occasions. Look at 18, 10, and 11. Remember, I'll just say this real quick too. You think about the Sermon on the Mount, right? We saw this with Cain and Abel. Huh? Cain and Abel. Cain became angry before he murdered. What do we have here? Saul getting angry, and then he's trying to murder. And that's where Jesus, when he dealt in the Sermon on the Mount, when he dealt with thou shalt not murder, it begins with anger, unjust anger in our hearts. And we can sin against the sixth commandment with unjust anger in our heart. Saul here is already violating the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments in verse 8 when Saul became angry. And here he is then, explicitly trying to kill and murder David. And it happened, verse 10 and 11 here of chapter 18, and it happened on the next day that The distressing spirit from God came from Saul, and he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hand, as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped his presence twice. Look at chapter 19, verse 2. Chapter 19, verse 2. So Jonathan is Saul's son. Jonathan told David, saying, My father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning and stay in a secret place and hide. Saul's still continuing trying to kill him. Look down at 6 through 10. So Saul heeded the voice of Jonathan, and Saul swore, as the Lord lives, he shall not be killed. Then Jonathan, now think of that a minute. He's swearing an oath that as the Lord lives, and yet Saul's out to kill him, violate that oath. Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these things. So Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past, and there was war again, and David went and struck them with a mighty blow, and they fled from him. The Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand, and David was playing music with his hand, and Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear, but he slipped away from Saul's presence, and he drove the spear into the wall. So David fled and escaped that night. There's Saul disobeying his, violating his vow, his oath. Now David becomes friends with Saul's son Jonathan, as we've seen here. Look at, up at verses 4 and 5. Chapter 19, 4 and 5. Thus Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been very good toward you. For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a cause? And it's obviously because he's jealous. Look at chapter 20, verse 17 here with Jonathan, David's friendship with Jonathan. Now Jonathan again caused David to vow because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. He loved him as he loved his own soul. And you remember Jonathan. Jonathan, to me, also is a man of faith. And look at chapter 14 real quick, just by review, with Jonathan. And it would make sense for Jonathan and David to be friends, knowing the heart of Jonathan with the heart of David. Remember Jonathan here, this young man, chapter 14, verse 1, young man with his armor bearer. It happened one day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who bore his armor, come, let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side. But he did not tell his father. And look down at verse 6. Jonathan said to the young man who bore his armor, come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us. For nothing restrains the Lord but from saving by many or by few. Remember, they had a battle. And look at verse about end of verse 10. For the Lord has delivered them into our hand. Jonathan said, for this will be assigned to us. And look, they said, come up. So they went up, and yes. Verse 12, the end of verse 12, come up after me, for the Lord has delivered them into the hand of Israel. It would make sense that Jonathan would and David would be best friends. For each of them has a heart after the Lord, for nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few. So Jonathan loved David. And in chapters 21 and 22, David also becomes friends with several priests of Israel. And they're killed as we went. Saul had them killed by a foreigner. He ordered a foreigner in chapter 22, 17 and 18 to go kill 85 priests of the Lord because they had befriended David. That's how wicked Saul was. He even ordered a foreigner to go murder 85 of Israel's priests because some of them had befriended David. But David had become friends not just with Jonathan, but with some of the priests too. Saul's pursuit of David continues in chapters 23 and 24. David could kill Saul. We find a couple of different times, but he does not. Look at chapter 24, verses 4 and 7. Chapters 24, verses 4 through 7. This is where Saul went into a cave. In verse 3, Saul went in to attend to his needs. Chapter 24, verse 3, verses 4 through 7. Then the men of David said to him, "This is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it seems good to you.' And David arose and secretly cut off a corner of Saul's robe." Now it happened afterward that David's heart troubled him because he had cut Saul's robe. Think about that a minute. His heart troubled him, and he didn't even do any physical harm to Saul. He just cut off part of his robe without Saul knowing. In verse 6, David said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." And we remember, I think it was chapter 13, verse 1, where Samuel had anointed Saul as king. So David, verse 7 here, chapter 24, verse 7, "So David restrained his servants with these words and did not allow them to rise against Saul. And Saul got up from the cave and went on his way." David fears God, fears God. Verse 6 and verse 10. Look at verse 6 again. "David said to his men, 'The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing that he is the anointed of the Lord.'" Lord's mentioned three times there in that verse, right? His concern was Saul had been anointed by the Lord. Look at verse 10. Down in verse 10, chapter 24, verse 10. David here, "Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you. But my eye spared you, and I said, 'I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord.'" Small L there. In other words, this is the king of Israel. "For he is the Lord's anointed." But David fears God. He fears the Lord. He fears Yahweh. Now, what's interesting is David lets judgment remain in God's hand, in God's providence. Chapter 24, verse 11 and 12. Look down there at verse 11 and 12. "Moreover, my father, see, yes, see the corner of your robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you, yet you hunt my life to take it. Let the Lord judge between you and me, and let the Lord avenge me on you. But my hand shall not be against you. Let the Lord judge between you and me, and let the Lord avenge me on you." In God's providence, he preserves and governs all his creatures and all their actions. And God, David knows that. And David commits the situation to the Lord, who governs all things. He said, "Let God take vengeance." Think of 1 Peter 2:23. 1 Peter 2:23. Peter said of Jesus, "Who, When he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. Jesus committed himself to the Lord who judges righteously. Say, you'll take care of these revilers. God will judge righteously. God will take care of things. We see that also in Romans 12. Romans 12:19, beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Quoting from Deuteronomy chapter 32. God reigns and rules, and he will ultimately right all wrong. True. He's setting a good example, and yet he knows, just like Jonathan has said, David hasn't done anything wrong. David hasn't sinned. He hasn't done anything deserving a punishment from the king. I would say that. See, that's what's key too, and that's what Jonathan, when he defended David before Saul, remember in chapter 19, verse 4, Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you and because his works have been very good toward you. I mean, that's the position of David. David hasn't done anything worthy of Saul harming him, punishing him as king, right? But certainly David doesn't want anyone seeking to kill him. But it's a good precedence, yeah. But the king would have every right to go after and punish somebody who does wrong. If David had done something worthy of death, you remember Paul before Felix in Acts, he stood before him and said, if I've done anything worthy of death, then let me die. Right? Remember that? Romans 13:4. That's why kings exist. Why? To bear the sword against evil. To be God's avenger. Right? But David hadn't done anything worthy of death. Nothing. All he's done is the complete opposite. What he's done is good things for Saul. He took care of the Philistines taking care of Goliath. Saul tries to kill David again in chapter 26, verses 4 through 12. Look here, David sent out spies and understood that Saul had indeed come. This is within the camp here of where Saul had camped. So David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped, verse 5. And David saw the place where Saul lay, and Abner the son of Ner, and the commander of his army. Now Saul lay within the camp, and the people encamped all around him. Then David answered and said to Ahimelech the Hittite, and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother of Joab, saying, who will go down with me to Saul in the camp? And Abishai said, I will go down with you. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and there Saul lay sleeping within the camp, with his spear stuck in the ground by his head. And Abner and the people lay all around him. Then Abishai said to David, God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now therefore, please, let me strike him at once with the spear right to the earth, and I will not have to strike him a second time. But David said to Abishai, do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David said, furthermore, as the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out to battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed, but please take now the spear and the jug of water that are by his head and let us go. So David took the spear and the jug of water by Saul's head, and they got away. And no man saw or knew it or awoke, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. The Saul's fake repentance here. Look at chapter 24, verse 16. This thing you have done is not good. As the Lord lives, you deserve to die, because you have not guarded your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the king's spear is and the jug of water that was by his head. Continue there. Then Saul knew David's voice and said, "Is that your voice, my son David?" David said, "It is my voice, my lord, O king." And he said, "Why does my lord thus pursue his servant? For what have I done, or what evil is in my hand?" That's just like Jonathan had said to him. "Now therefore, please let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering. But if it is the children of men, may they be cursed before the Lord, for they have driven me out this day from sharing in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, 'Go serve other gods.' So now do not let my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord, for the king of Israel has come out to see a flea as when one hunts a partridge in the mountains." Then Saul said, look at verse 21, "I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will harm you no more, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Indeed, I have played the fool and erred exceedingly." And that's where David, in verse 22, hears the king's spear. It's really a fake repentance. It's the same where Samuel confronted him for Amalek's, for not destroying all the Amalek's people and belongings and everything in chapter 15. And then when he was confronted by Samuel, he says, "Yeah, I've sinned, but please honor me in front of the elders." It's never genuine repentance. It's just words only by Saul. In the last five chapters of 1 Samuel, David lives among the Philistines. Isn't that something? Israel's enemy. The only safe place was with Israel's enemies, for David. And the book ends with Jonathan and Saul both dying on the same day in chapter 31, verses 2 and 4, where the Philistines, middle of verse 2, killed Jonathan along with others of Saul's sons. And that's where Saul murdered himself, committed suicide there. End of verse 4, Saul took a sword and fell on it. More of David's life is given in 2 Samuel. That's where we mention only part of David's life is found here in 1 Samuel. David's heart is that God is our only hope. God is our only hope. Same with Jonathan's. If we're going to have victory, whether it be many or few, it's in the Lord's hands. It's in the Lord's hands. And obviously, in God's providence, Jonathan's days were numbered. In God's hand is our life breath and our ways. Turn the board around here. Now, if you remember, I didn't cover Hannah's prayer at the beginning. You remember back a couple lessons ago? We looked at Samuel's life. I said, we'll get back to Hannah's prayer. So now we're getting back to Hannah's prayer at the beginning of 1 Samuel. Remember, Hannah was the mother. She was barren, mother of Samuel. And she had prayed and said, If I could receive a son, I'll dedicate him to you for his whole life. Hannah seemed to understand, and we'll read here her prayer, chapter 2, 1 through 10. Hannah seemed to understand that both her safety and the safety of the nation lie not in an earthly judge or king, but in God alone. David is a man after God's own heart. His hope was only in God. He relied only in God. He trusted in God. He was concerned with God's glory, God's honor, and he trusted in God and God's strength. He relied upon God and God's providence over all things. Right? So turn to chapter 2, 1 Samuel, chapter 2, 1 through 10. Remember, this is, look back up there at chapter 1, verse 20. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked for him from the Lord. And she didn't take the child up for Eli until after he'd been weaned, verse 22, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever. The end of verse 22 of chapter 1. Look at 26, 27, and 28. Bringing the child to Eli there. And she said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore, I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. So they worship the Lord there. Here's Hannah's prayer, chapter 2, 1 through 10. And Hannah prayed and said, my heart rejoices in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. No one is holy like the Lord, for there is none besides you, nor is there any rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let no arrogance come from your mouth. Almost like she's talking to Saul. For the Lord is the God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty men are broken. Goliath falls. And those who stumbled are girded with strength. Those who are full have hired themselves out for bread, and the hungry have ceased to hunger. Even the barren has borne seven, and she who has many children has become feeble. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and brings up. Huh? David, God protected. Jonathan fell in battle. Both of them trusted in the Lord. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and brings up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and lifts up. Little David, the shepherd boy. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the beggar from the ash heap to set them among princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. As he put David there from a shepherd boy and anointed him as king. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. If it be in God's hand to take revenge, let God take revenge, right? The pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will guard the feet of his saints, but the wicked shall be silent in darkness, for by strength no man shall prevail. Saul relied on his own strength. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken in pieces. From heaven he will thunder against them. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. She understood that both her safety and the safety of the nation lie not in an earthly judge or king, but in God alone. David understood that. Jonathan understood that. The books of history, we've gone through Joshua, Judges, Ruth, here, 1 Samuel. Think of the books of 1 and 2 Samuel there, the books of Kings, 1 and 2 Kings, are about one primary thing, that God alone is Lord, God alone is to be trusted. God's people had deserted God. when they wanted an earthly king. Think how strange it was to have a nation established without an earthly king. They were the only ones. Just God's law to govern them, because God was their king. He's the lawgiver, right? Yes. Hannah knew who she should trust, that she should trust the Lord. It's very clear in her prayer. God made the same point when the Philistines captured the Ark of the Covenant. You remember that. We went over that in chapter 5, verses 2 through 4. Turn over there real quick. Chapter 5, 2 through 4. When the Philistines took the Ark of God, in chapter 5, verse 2, when the Philistines took the Ark of God, they brought it into the house of Dagon and set it by Dagon, their idol. And when the people of Ashdod rose early in the morning, there was Dagon, fallen on its face to the earth before the Ark of the Lord. So they took Dagon and set it in its place again. And when they arose early the next morning, there was Dagon, fallen on its face to the ground before the Ark of the Lord. The head of Dagon and both the palms of its hands were broken off on the threshold. Only Dagon's torso was left of it. And therefore, neither the priests of Dagon nor any who come into Dagon's house tread on the threshold of Dagon and Ashdod to this day. And then goes on to say that the hand of the Lord was heavy on the people of Ashdod, and he ravaged them and struck them with tumors. Verse 6. But what? The defeat of God's people was not the defeat of God's power. There he is, toppling their idol. Huh? The books of Samuel and Kings teach us that God is the people's king, truly. David knows it, even though he's anointed as king. If there will be victory, it will be victory because God gives them the victory in any battle. At Saul's coronation as king, Samuel retells the people of Israel their history so that they can see how full their history is with God's faithfulness. With God's faithfulness. Chapter 12. Turn over to 1 Samuel 12, 6 through 15. Samuel's address at Saul's coronation as king. Chapter 12, verses 6 through 15. Then Samuel said to the people, "It is the Lord who raised up Moses and Aaron and who brought your fathers up from the land of Egypt. Now therefore stand still, that I may reason with you before the Lord concerning all the righteous acts of the Lord which he did to you and your fathers. When Jacob had gone into Egypt and your fathers cried out to the Lord, then the Lord sent Moses and Aaron who brought your fathers out of Egypt and made them dwell in this place. And when they forgot the Lord their God, he sold them into the hand of Sisera, commander of the army of Hazar, into the hand of the Philistines, and into the hand of the king of Moab, and they fought against them. Then they cried out to the Lord and said, 'We have sinned because we have forsaken the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtoreths, the idols. But now deliver us from the hand of our enemies, and we will serve you.' And the Lord sent," here we have different judges, Jerubbaal, Bedan, Jephthah, and Samuel, "and delivered you out of the hand of your enemies on every side, and you dwelt in safety. And when you saw that Nahash, king of the Ammonites, came against you, you said to me, 'No, but a king shall reign over us,' when the Lord your God was your king. Now therefore, here is the king whom you have chosen and whom you have desired, and take note, the Lord has set a king over you. If you fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and do not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then both you and the king who reigns over you will continue following the Lord your God. However, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then the hand of the Lord will be against you as it was against your fathers." Notice in middle of verse 14, "If you fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and do not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then both you and the king who reigns over you will continue to be following the Lord your God." And we know Saul himself was disobedient. But he's retelling the story, and he's telling us too that no earthly king can truly protect and save us. Only God. We must rely upon God, not men. We must not rely on our own strength, human strength at all. We're to be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might, Ephesians 6:10. Here's what's amazing. Look at chapter 13. Chapter 13, verses 19 to 22. It was really only Saul and Jonathan that had swords, armor. Chapter 13, verses 19 to 22. Now there was no blacksmith to be found throughout all the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make swords or spears. But all the Israelites would go down to the Philistines to sharpen each man's plowshare, his mattock, his axe, and his sickle for farming. And the charge for a sharpening was a pim for the plowshares, the mattocks, the forks, and the axes, and to set the points of the goads. So it came about on the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people who were with Saul and Jonathan. But they were found with Saul and Jonathan, his son. They were the ones who had sword and spear. That's amazing. Our reliance and confidence must be in God, even if we seem weak, even if we have, in earthly perspectives, no weapons. God can still give us the victory, whether we are few or many. And think about that. In chapter 14, the very next chapter is when Jonathan goes over with his armor bearer, his young armor bearer. And he says, you know, that's where he says there, it may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or few, and even if they hardly have any swords or spears. Wow, great faith. It's no wonder that Jonathan and David had a love of one another and were friends. They had their trust and confidence in God and God alone. And may each of us trust in God and God alone, as Hannah did, as David did, as Jonathan did. We have a spiritual battle every day as we're going through Ephesians. It is so easy for us to want to trust in our own strength. Every day we've got to remind ourselves that apart from Christ we can do nothing, John 15:5. That we need God's grace, we need Christ living in us through the Holy Spirit each day to win the battles that will take place spiritually. Apart from God we'll fail. Pastor Ron?